Nacho Land Podcast with David Amoyala.
Benvenuti, as we would say in Italy. Welcome to all of you that don't speak Italian. Thank you so much for joining us for the second episode of the week of the Calcio Land podcast. So today we're recording this on Thursday. This is right after Juve's loss to Atletico Madrid. So we'll get into that quite a bit at the top. We also have quite a few questions on that match and the aftermath. Since it's Thursday, we have a weekend of Serie A action coming up. So we'll have our game picks with our friend Thousand Names. We, of course, have our Twitter questions from our listeners. We've been getting really a lot of them. So I really appreciate it. If we didn't get to yours today, we will in upcoming weeks. And we're going to close the podcast with an interview with our dear friend John Solano to talk a little bit about what's going on with Roma. We've touched base on all the top teams in Serie A, so we wanted to circle back on Roma. So, Alex, I'm joined by our great friend, producer, co-host of the show, Alex Goldberg. So, Alex, we have to start on Juve. So let's talk about the match, but I want to frame it in this way. 2-0 away loss is a very tough result in the Champions League against anyone. I think against a team like Atletico Madrid, especially difficult to come back from. So let's just go on the assumption that Juve doesn't pull off a somewhat semi-miraculous comeback, considering that they've also been eliminated in the Coppa Italia and they've won so many Serie A titles in a row. Assuming they're eliminated, you think it's fair to call their season kind of a disaster, or do you think that's a little bit too harsh?
I definitely think it's too harsh, David, but I understand why that question would be asked, because they're simply now above, and it sounds ridiculous, it sounds a little uppity of me to say, but they're just above looking at a Scudetto as really an achievement, because they're just so used to winning them. But I think if you look at the context closer, and you still do treat them as a regular top club compared to other leagues, it still is an achievement to win your league title. I mean, it is. I don't care how good Barcelona, Real Madrid, Bayern Munich are, Manchester City are, they still view it as an achievement to win their league title. And I think very highly of Serie A. So just because Juve just constantly win the Scudetto doesn't mean it should no longer be an achievement. Now, that's me saying disaster is taking it too far, but a disappointment? Yeah, I think it would be a disappointment, because we know the Champions League is their objective and it doesn't look good for them, as you said, losing 2-0 to Atletico yesterday, even though Atletico is a very damn good team. So maybe I'd be saying disaster if it was like a Schalke or one of those lower level Champions League teams that they're about to get kicked out from. So, you know, disappointment, yes. Disaster, no. And I understand just one trophy is really not going to be acceptable for Juve fans. As you mentioned, they're also out of the Coppa Italia. But when you take a step back and you think about the fact that they will win the Scudetto, which is still a very good trophy, and if they get knocked out, it's from an Atletico Madrid, I can't call that a disaster, but I can call it a disappointment. So, David, that's my take. What about you?
So, you know me, I try my best not to be a prisoner of the moment and try to look at it more long term. So when I think, though, at like the landscape of this Champions League, this really felt like a great opportunity for Juve. And look, you know, they could still make a comeback, but, you know, it looks rather difficult. And the reason I say this season made a lot of sense, I know Bayern and Real Madrid have been better recently, but they aren't the juggernauts they've been in recent seasons. So Juve, in some way, didn't have to face as tough competition. We do know the Champions League is a crapshoot, and Atletico Madrid was as tough a draw as they were going to get in this round, not just for the team's ability, but also their style of play, which is really, really similar to Juve. I think Allegri would have much rather face a team that plays a little bit more offensive so he could set up the counter for them. But when I look, you know, at that context, this Champions League being winnable, and yeah, Ronaldo's in great shape, but he also is 34. You would assume that out of the years that Juve is going to get out of him, this was the one you would assume he would be the strongest. There's no doubt that, you know, you have to look at this as a disappointment. The other thing is, you know, recently Juve's been getting, you know, beat up a little bit because of some of sales of for fees that are definitely on the surface look quite inflated to try to make up what they put out to buy Ronaldo and his wages. You know, they got a big returns on Cherry, Audero, and Sturaro recently in the summer, Mandragora. So to me, they're going to get beat up over that. They also have to lift the trophy. Ronaldo, when you bring him in, that's the objective, is the Champions League. They could have won the Scudetto without him. Sure, they did it before. And I know we were saying similar things when Higuain came on board, that they were trying to raise the bar with the number nine, which was really the position historically. They were lacking a consistent goal scorer. But Higuain doesn't have nearly the track record in the Champions League that Ronaldo has, and the track record that Ronaldo liked to remind Atletico Madrid fans yesterday with the symbol five there that he flashed a few times. So I think it's fair to say that it's a huge disappointment. Complete disaster is definitely stretching it, but also they aren't facing Napoli, isn't as good as they were last year. Milan's definitely on their way up. Inter, for the second season in a row, looks pace to make the Champions League, but they also don't have incredible competition in Serie A. So, you know, I know at the end of the season, when Juve inevitably wins the Scudetto, there's going to be a lot of tweets and a lot of articles on trying to say how it's significant that they still won, and we can't take for granted this streak of titles, which I think is completely true. But two things can be true at the same time. You bring in Ronaldo and you look at the landscape of the competition in the Champions League, you have to be very disappointed for how this is going, assuming they get eliminated. But we saw last year where they almost made that huge comeback against Real Madrid. Let's see if they have another one in them. But that looks rather tough as we sit right now.
All right, David, we have a weekend of Serie A ahead of us, so we love to do this on Thursday. We have our game picks with you, and the absolutely wonderful Thousand Names is really becoming quite popular for these. So, David, without further ado, what do we have from you in Thousand?
So first match, we have Inter traveling to Florence to face Fiorentina. And Thousand has Fiorentina winning 1-0, goal by Chiesa. And he says Spalletti's players are distracted by Atletico's win. And at the end of the match, everyone's going to celebrate together because Fiorentina is a big rival of Juventus as well. So this is extra sweet for them as well. In Italian, Fiorentina Inter 1-0, Chiesa e ragazzi di Spalletti distratti dalla vittoria dell'Atletico. A fine partita si festeggia assieme, fidatevi. Next match, Juve traveling to Emilia-Romagna to face Bologna. Thousand, bold pick, has Bologna winning 1-0 with a goal by Soriano. I don't even need to translate. Ronaldo sbaglia rigori. And he says Allegri has lost the locker room and that the team is in complete freefall. In Italian, Bologna-Lazio 1-0, Soriano, Ronaldo sbaglia rigore, Allegri ha perso il controllo dello spogliatoio, squadra allo sbando. So let me make my pick for the first one. I'm going to say Fiorentina-Inter. I'm going to have it as a 1-1 draw. I'm going to have a goal for Perisic, who's energized by Icardi being out. I don't know if Icardi will play in this, probably not likely. And I'm going to give a goal to my boy Muriel. Bologna-Juve, I'm going to disagree with Thousand. Not surprisingly, I'm going to have Juve winning. I think they are definitely going to look for a reaction against Bologna, who have been better under Mihailovic. But I'm going to have Juve winning 2-0. I'm going to give a goal to Mandzukic and one to Dybala, who really needs it after that poor performance against Atletico Madrid. Last match of the weekend picked by Thousand, Napoli traveling to Parma. He has Napoli winning 1-0 with a goal by Mertens. And he says Ancelotti's starting to make up some ground in the standings and is already starting to focus on the direct match against Juve. And he says that without Insigne, Napoli takes off. In Italian, Parma-Napoli 0-1, Mertens, Ancelotti accorcia in classifica e pensa allo scontro diretto senza Insigne. Si vola. So Napoli hasn't scored two matches in a row. They've struggled in general scoring in away matches. Parma has a very solid defense. They play a very defensive counter-attacking match. This is going to be a challenging match, but I'm going to agree with Thousand. I think Napoli is going to get back on track and win this. I'm going to have it 1-0 as well, but I'm going to give a goal to Milik. So it's been a while. I love when our listeners pick the matches along with us, so feel free to reply. So as a reminder, Fausen has Fiorentina beating Inter. He has Bologna beating Juve, and he has Napoli beating Parma. I have Fiorentina Inter as a draw. I have Juve beating Bologna, and I also agree with Fausen beating Parma. So now let's get to some fantastic Twitter questions. As always, you can send them in using the CalcioLand hashtag. We got a good variety today. Serie A transfers, some Champions League after Juve's loss. So this is the types of questions that we look for. We have a lot that we want to get to because we did get a lot of questions for this week, some that we had answered in the past, and I will answer them again. I just want to give some time in between. So which ones are we going to go over today, Alex?
All right, David, this is a really interesting one to start off with. Comes from William De Aquila, and he asks, if you can only pick one, was the Ronaldo acquisition more of a business or a sporting decision?
So mind you, he put me on the spot. I can only pick one because so I'm going to be true to this. I'm going to say it's more of a business decision. And I think Juve made it pretty clear that they felt they had really reached their limit on what they could do revenue wise. And they really wanted something to put them on the map. I think acquiring an iconic player like Ronaldo definitely made them more visible. I mean, I remember here. During the World Cup here in the United States, during World Cup games, they were talking about Juve being set to acquire Ronaldo. You don't normally get that type of exposure here in the United States in that setting. We've seen Juve's revenues go up. And granted, you know, in the short term, they invested a lot in Ronaldo, but we talked about some of the sales of the players and how they're making up for it. So definitely, if I had to pick one, a business decision, but it also is a sporting one as well. If you think about it on paper, he really was the type of player to elevate him in the Champions League. So yesterday, you know, I tweeted that it really felt like Juve's season was starting yesterday. The matches, and our friend Daniel Robertson, their former social media manager, replied. He goes, yeah, you're right. The matches against lower table teams in Serie A where they don't seem that into it, those don't really count. Ronaldo was really the type of player that was supposed to strike fear in opponents. And granted, tiny sample size yesterday, but in general, in the Champions League, he only has one goal for Juve. But I do think that because he is raising Juve's profile marketing-wise and finances, it's eventually going to also benefit the sporting side. But I think it's fair to say that more should have been expected for him this season already. And look, again, we're going on the assumption that Juve isn't going to make a comeback, but they certainly could. And they really need him to make that happen. But if I had to pick one of the two, it's definitely a business decision.
Okay, I would definitely agree. All right, David, let's stay on Juventus. Is it time for Juventus to move away from Allegri next summer?
So again, I don't want to be a prisoner of the moment. And I was thinking right before we were recording that, you know, it's kind of ironic because Allegri is always criticized for being boring and defensive, that the match that maybe even some of his biggest defenders have a hard time defending was against another very pragmatic, boring defensive manager like Simeone. So I found that kind of ironic that that happened. So look, you know, if they don't make a comeback, you know, I always say it's hard. It's easy to sack a manager, hard to find someone better. It's not going to be necessarily easy to find someone better than Allegri. But I also think if they get eliminated here, I think you can make a case that his time has come and gone. I think, you know, Juve showed with Marotta that they make a change before a change is necessary. And maybe this falls under that category. Now, in Allegri's defense, yesterday's match, I think, you know, Khedira not being there, and I know he's a player that Juve fans like bang on like the piñata. I think he had prepared the match, assuming Khedira would play. And I think in the Champions League, he's proven to be a big game player. He is one of their midfielder that does create something offensively. Bentancur is a very solid player, but it's not that he brings much offensively. Also, Pjanic had a fever. You guys know I'm not the hugest Pjanic fan, but that definitely was a factor yesterday as well. So I don't want to make too many excuses. I found that Allegri, those games management was really pretty poor yesterday. I didn't have a huge problem with De Sciglio starting, having a more defensive right back, but I was puzzled that Cancelo didn't come in way sooner. Dybala, I get why he started, but he was playing scared. Flat out, he got outmanaged yesterday. So assuming Juve doesn't make a comeback and doesn't make it all the way to winning the Champions League, I'd have to know who the replacement is, but I could see why you could make a case that it might be time to move on. And I think Allegri is going to do very well wherever he goes. I think he's shown he's really a great manager for a top, top club, handles the media, the locker room, everything really well. But I think maybe all the Juve fans that want someone that plays a little bit different style, maybe they should get their wish. And I think it also goes beyond that, that I think it might be time to make a change just to give a shake up to the team.
All right, David, how about this? If Juve are knocked out this early in the Champions League, will this be considered another embarrassment for Serie A in Europe?
I just see it as an embarrassment for Juve. I don't really see it so much for Serie A as a whole. You know, it'd be ironic if, once again, Roma's the team that goes the furthest in the Champions League. They have a better chance than Juve in the return leg. So I think Roma, you know, showing that a team other than Juve can do pretty well in Europe is interesting. I really want to see how Napoli does in the Europa League. I think looking at the landscape, they should be going all in for that. So I see what happened yesterday as really just an embarrassment for Juve, because their expectations are definitely higher than being out in the round of 16, assuming that happens.
Okay, it's swap time. David, what do you think of the rumored Paulo Dybala for Mohamed Salah swap?
So I don't think it's true. I mean, I like to confirm or deny the work of others, but it would really surprise me. I know there's been a lot of talk on Dybala potentially leaving with the times he's been benched and all, but let's just look at it as a whole. To me, if Juve sells Dybala, I mean, the downside is their other strikers are older, and he is someone, you know, his value is definitely down, but he has the best years of his career ahead of him, and he has shown flashes of being able to be the main striker on a top team. To me, if Juve sacrifices Dybala, it shouldn't be for another striker. And again, I get that the older ones are older, but they do have Bernardeschi, Douglas Costa, another player that I think is situation at Juve is a little bit up in the air. Actually, I have to say, between Douglas Costa and Dybala, I think it's more likely that Douglas Costa won't be on the team. But to me, if Dybala goes, he's obviously a player that still would fetch a huge fee, but I think Juve would have to use that money to bolster the midfield and also the center back position. I mean, even yesterday, Chiellini, for once, really wasn't his usual solid self. Bonucci hasn't been great defensively, and I'm being generous here. So to me, if Juve sacrifices Dybala, it shouldn't be to bring another great offensive weapon. They should give more space to Bernardeschi, who seems like a better fit next to Ronaldo and Mandzukic anywhere, and just use that money to improve the midfield and then get a young center back to bolster that line long term.
All right, David, this is a good one. Who will be the next non-Juventus Serie A champions?
So we've been asked this before, and I think, you know, it still comes down to either Inter or Milan. I think Napoli's done really well, but I think really their big shot was last year. I'm not sure kind of their model, how sustainable it is. They're having big problems too with their stadium and fans not showing up. So I'm a big fan of what Napoli does as a whole. I still think they have a good squad. They're managed really well on the transfer market, but I think really their big shot was last year. Revenue-wise, they just can't compete with Juve. Their payroll last year was like considerably lower than Juve's. I think Inter and Milan could be there. If I had to pick just one, I'm going to go with the, you know, I'm going to kind of contradict myself, because I do think Icardi is going to be on Inter next season. But if he isn't, I think they're a clear Ewing Fury contender. Inter is almost out of their financial fair play situation. I think there's a very good chance they make the Champions League 2 years in a row. I think Milan's absolutely on the right trajectory. I could see Milan contending for the Scudetto, but I think they're at least 1 or 2 years away. I could see Inter maybe next season being a contender if everything breaks their way. So if I had to pick one, just Inter, but I think it is definitely going to be one out of Inter or Milan long term.
You know, I was thinking yesterday when Godin had that great game and goal. Man, just if Antonio Conte did manage Inter next season and Skriniar stayed, There isn't a better manager to manage a back three of Godin, DeVry, and Skriniar, and that's coming from Alex Goldberg. So I really think they'd be quite formidable if they had that back three. So you never know. All right, David, this is one of our favorite moments now of these podcasts. Prisoner of the Moment asks, is Icardi the poster boy for everything that is wrong with modern football?
It's tempting to say yes. And, you know, the more I look at the situation, and I'm writing an article for The Athletic on this, I'm not really going to blame his wife, agent Wanda Nara, but I think it's really more her than him. I think Icardi seems like a nice person, but really a follower. I'm not going to say she's manipulating him, but she's definitely leading the way this is all being handled, all the social media and being on TV. So if you had to say, you know, and again, I've said it many times, there's other agents that act in very similar ways than Wanda. And I think she gets a bad rap because she's a female and she looks the way she does. And she uses social media in the way that she does. But I'm going to say if you had to pick one to say that this situation's bad, I definitely think it's her more than him. But again, at the end of the day, it's his career. It's his choice who he has as his agent. So it's him as well. But if I had to pick one between the two, it would be her. But again, with the caveat that I do think people pile on her because she's a woman.
Okay. How about this? Has Romagnoli done enough this season to earn a spot in the tier of defenders right now below Chiellini and Koulibaly?
He's definitely making a great case for sure. So for me, you know, I've always ranked, for me, the two elite are Koulibaly, Chiellini. In one game, I'll still take Chiellini, although last night definitely wasn't one of his best showing over a season. I take Koulibaly. So for me, they're a step above the rest. I kind of always had Skriniar third. I think Romagnoli is getting really close to that. I think Romagnoli, to me, you can make a case he's surpassed Manolas, who really has no help really at Roma around him. And we'll get into that with John Solano. But I think you can make a case Romagnoli has at least matched Manolas, if not surpassed him. I have De Vrij right there in that mix. I think De Vrij has been really good at Inter as well. So I have Romagnoli definitely in that tier. If someone said that they have Romagnoli with Skriniar and above De Vrij and Manolas, I really wouldn't argue too much. I think you can make a case, but there's no doubt that Romagnoli is the great next Italian defender. I mean, the comparisons with Rugani, that was dead a long time ago. And I think right now, really, his competition is Skriniar, two young defenders. That's really the level he's on. I'm still going to give a very slight edge to Skriniar over him. But I can also understand why there's a lot of people backing Romagnoli, because he really is having an excellent season. Milan's defense has been much better since the last fall. I think a lot of it has to do with Romagnoli coming back as well. So the numbers don't lie. He's definitely improved a lot, and I would definitely call him one of the elite defenders in Serie A now.
All right. This is an interesting question from Majin Tenshi, and he asks, what Serie A club would be the best fit for Maurizio Sarri? Oh, never heard of him. If/when he returns to Italy.
So, look, I'll tell you, the silver lining of the whole Sarri thing, which you and I, Alex, saw coming a mile away. The only thing that surprised me was kind of the fast start. Everything else really not surprising. So I blame more who put him in charge than him. But if he comes back to Serie A, it would be very interesting. I know there's a lot of buzz on him for Roma. An interesting fit, although Roma does sell a lot of players. I could see Sarri complaining a lot about it. There also is a fairly strong rivalry between Napoli and Roma as teams. They've had problems with ultras. It's the Derby del Sole. There is some bad blood between the two. Sarri does have a lot of loyalty to Napoli, so I'm not sure if he sees it a fit there. The two clubs in Milan, you know, I think Gattuso's done plenty to deserve to come back next season, regardless of where they finish. I know some people would disagree. I'm not sure if I think Inter or Milan, if they make a coaching change, Conte makes a lot more sense for him. But I'm going to give you the answer that might surprise people, and I've been thinking a lot about it. To me, the best fit for Sarri would be Lazio. Lazio has hired a lot of big name managers. They're not afraid to spend pretty significantly on managers. They had to almost brought in Bielsa a few years ago. In the past, they've done similar hires like that. I think he'd fit really well at Lazio because that is a club that does try to hold on to their players more. It is the type of place where there would be some expectations, but not huge expectations. I think there are more at Roma. So when I look at everything, I think Lazio would be the best fit for all involved. And, you know, you guys know I love Sarri. I was hoping he'd prove me wrong and do better at Chelsea, but I'd welcome him back with open arms in Serie A, and that's where I'd like to see him next.
Yeah, 1,000% agree, even though I really feel like I'm in the thick of it every day and my opinion is somewhat changing. If this does not work out for Sarri at Chelsea, you have to look at Chelsea themselves first. They're the ones that hired him. So if they sack him, that really means, David, they didn't do their full homework on Maurizio Sarri. All right, next Twitter question. Which position should Parma look to improve on next season?
So Parma has a very good formula, to me, in my opinion. They brought in veterans. They brought in some players back to Serie A. Gervinho in the summer, he was a home run. Kuchka in the January window, he's already paid dividends. They have a very strong defense. Their manager, Daversa, is an old-school calcio manager, counterattack, strong defense, try to hit teams when they least expect them. It's worked really well this season. So I think they need to keep building on that formula. The other thing that Parma does is they've created relationships with a lot of clubs in Serie A. They brought quite a few players from Napoli, and I think they need to keep doing that, building those relationships. Even with Inter, they brought in a very good young defender, Bastoni. It'll be interesting, you know, especially with Godin coming in. Maybe Inter just leaves them there at Parma. I think that would make sense for all involved. If Bastoni leaves, that's definitely an area they need to improve. Bruno Alves, their other center back, has been excellent this season, but is older. I think more than anything, Parma, you know, has to figure out their manager situation. Daversa, definitely one of the up-and-coming managers in Serie A. I could see him going to a bigger club. If not, I think what's really important for Parma is to nail their next manager. They have a lot of positive momentum, but if they make the wrong hire, if Daversa leaves, that could be a problem. But I think they really are a blueprint for what a club that comes up to Serie A should look to do. Now, Parma has the advantage that they are a known brand because of what they were in the past. I think for a player like Gervinho, going to a club like Frosinone isn't as appealing as Parma because people know of Parma. But I think a lot of those principles, get some veterans, try synergies with other top Serie A clubs to get some players on loan or option and counter option to buy, because that's worked out really well. That's what a newly promoted club should do.
Okay, David, this one makes me chuckle. Who's more annoying when it comes to complaining between Mazzarri and Simone Inzaghi?
Yeah, I think, you know, had Sarri still been in Serie A, he would have been in this question. And I think he probably was the most creative when it came to complaining. But I think, yeah, the two contenders right now are Mazzarri and Simone Inzaghi. I've always found Mazzarri pretty endearing, like similar to Sarri's style of complaining, you know, the weather, game times. And I think this season, you know, I don't really like to get into referees too much in VAR, but Torino's definitely been in the middle of a lot of controversial ones. So I think maybe Mazzarri has some good reasons to complain. I think Simone Inzaghi's complaining is more annoying because A, he has a better squad than Torino has this season. This time last year, Simone Inzaghi was the up-and-coming Italian manager, but we saw a lot of his top players, like Luis Alberto, Milinkovic-Savic, got to very poor starts to the season. Milinkovic-Savic was much better in 2019 before the injuries, but he really didn't get the most out of them. So I think Simone Inzaghi is more annoying because he has less reasons to complain. And you just know it. Every time Lazio loses, there is going to be a litany of excuses. But I think he has more reason to look in the mirror than Mazzarri.
All right, David, let's move away from football. What's your opinion on Greta Van Fleet? Would you rather just listen to old Led Zeppelin records rather than their music?
So here's the thing. When I look at the context of the situation now that there's really no big rock bands, you look at all the big festivals like Coachella and all that, there's really no rock acts anymore. I feel like Jack White is maybe the last guitar hero and someone that really plays guitar as the main instrument. So I'm all in favor of a band that plays, you know, instruments, plays guitar, and is about rock music, because I feel we need a lot more than that. All the big tour acts in the rock circuit are all much older. Greta Van Fleet does get a good amount of people. So I think it's great, the fact that they bring more interest to the genre. Now, yeah, they are a complete Led Zeppelin ripoff. But guess what? Led Zeppelin too ripped off a lot of black musicians when they got started. Obviously, they created really a sound and they were the blueprint for a hard rock act. But I think, you know, Greta Van Fleet, you know, will get more people to get into listening to Zeppelin and old rock acts. And if they get more young people to go to a rock show and see what the vibe there is, a good thing. I compare it a little bit to like when Scorsese did The Departed. It was a remake of a movie from Hong Kong and made me want to go back and watch the original. So I think there's definitely a lot of good that comes out of it. So I'm really not that against this. I wouldn't just listen to old Zeppelin records. I have checked them out. And although it's very derivative, I kind of like what I see.
All right, David, really good friend of the show, Tone Ortiz asks, what are some of your favorite cover songs?
Yeah, shout out to Tone, great guy. And he mentioned, you know, one that is brought up a lot. This is Johnny Cash covering Nine Inch Nails' Hurt, one of the best covers ever. I mean, it was also one of the last things Johnny Cash did before he died. Really emotional, but even if you just take it as a great cover, that's really one that it's easy to pick. You know, another one that's really famous is Jimi Hendrix doing All Along the Watchtower. You know, doing Dylan covers and whatnot. So those are the classics, but I'm going to give you some of mine that I really enjoy. Some of these might surprise you a little bit more. I have Oasis doing the Beatles' I Am the Walrus, which is on their album of B-sides. I think that might be the best Oasis song, although it's a cover. That just really a fantastic cover, very hard song to pull it off. And I think it was recorded live. So I'm going to put that up there as one of my favorites. I'm going to have Metallica had a whole album of covered called Garage Days. It was an EP originally. They did a larger album in the 90s. A lot of different genres, and I think those covers are all awesome. Metallica does a lot of covers during their show, and they pull them off really well. I know for a lot of people, Guns N' Roses would pick Knocking on Heaven's Door, but I will say Live and Let Die, the cover of Paul McCartney from a 007 movie, has really grown on me, especially when you hear versions from the 90s live. I think that's an incredible cover. They really owned that song. I'm going to give you one that might surprise people in another sense. And this is the band Travis. They are a band from the UK, very famous over there, not so famous in the UK. They are kind of a Oasis, Radiohead style band, guitars like that. And they covered Britney Spears' Hit Me Baby One More Time in a very creative way. That's a great cover. But my two favorite, and this is kind of topical, we're recording this on Thursday. Yesterday was Kurt Cobain's birthday. Would have been only 52. Now that I'm in my early 40s, makes me realize how young that would have been. I'm going to pick the two covers Nirvana did on their Unplugged, and that was David Bowie's The Man Who Sold the World. But especially the last song, Where'd You Sleep Last Night, on that Unplugged is incredible. This is an old folk song from the 1800s. I did some research. It was covered by a lot of other acts. And if you told me that that's the best, that's the apex of the grunge era, that performance of that song, I wouldn't disagree. I know some people said, well, you know, it's not a hard rock song, it's acoustic, but to me, that really is the apex. The performance is incredible. You can really just see Kurt Cobain bearing his soul on that one. So that's my pick. So as usual, thank you guys for the questions. I also want to thank you guys. The amount of reviews you guys have left, that's fantastic. Really, really helps us grow. This is a completely free podcast. It's really terrific, your support. So I appreciate it. I challenge you guys to bring us up in the U.S. to 400 reviews by my birthday. We'll get there by the 200th episode. So please keep doing that. It really helps us grow. Thank you all for the questions. Please send them in with the CouchLand hashtag. We have some others that you've already sent in to get to, but send some new ones. So now let's get to Roma. I interviewed our great friend, John Solano from IS Roma Press. We got into the new stadium on Roma, their season so far, a lot of interesting topics. So I think you'll enjoy that. So we've had John Solano on our podcast so many times that I don't think he even needs an introduction. He's almost the co-host with Alex and I. Of course, you guys know John from the fantastic IS Roma Press site, one of my favorite, not just an aggregator, a lot of unique content. You can read John also writes a lot of great articles on Euro fantasy games. And recently he started a podcast called Serie A Show with two other frequent CouchLand guests, Nima Tavalli and Chloe Beresford. So, John, it's always a pleasure to chat with you. Welcome back to CouchLand.
Thanks, David. Happy to be back.
Okay, John, so we're heading into the final third of the season. So I've been asking all our guests that cover the various teams very simply to give me a grade on the teams that they cover so far. So let me ask you, what grade would you give Roma at this exact moment in time?
If we were going to go on just a 10-point scale, I would say it's below average. So I would say 4. And I think that would even be pretty generous. It's been a very below expectation season for Roma so far, in my opinion.
I'm kind of surprised, but I know you're a harsh grader. So I'm interested in hearing a little bit more. So let me ask you in this way, because at the beginning of the January transfer window, it seemed on your site and in a lot of places, Roma was mainly linked to midfielders. And then, of course, we had the explosions of quite a few of them, especially Cristante, Zaniolo, which we'll get to in a second, Pellegrini doing well. But I want to ask you, are you surprised that Roma didn't do anything at all to improve the defense? I know in the last day or two of the transfer window, they were linked to a few. So, A, are you surprised by this? And how much do you think this will come back to haunt them?
Well, I think it's going to come back to haunt them a lot. I mean, that 4 grade that I gave them, it's, listen, they're way below where they need to be in the league. They've dropped points to Spal, Chievo, Bologna, Udinese. I mean, these are pretty poor sides, especially this season. And a lot of these points being dropped has a lot to do with the defense. The defense this season has been dreadful. Absolutely dreadful. The attack has been no issue at all. I mean, they're scoring with ease at times, but the defense is just so leaky. Really, the only reliable name that they have at the back is Kostas Manolas. Fazio, who you could have made the argument was one of the best defenders in Serie A all of last season, has, I mean, fallen off a cliff, doesn't even begin to explain. I mean, his form has just plummeted to the point where he's gone from one of the, you know, the centauri of the team, extremely reliable to the point where you almost wonder if Roma would be better off playing Juan Jesus, because Fazio is just so, so poor. I mean, even this past weekend, Roma, they scraped out a victory over Bologna. I mean, Fazio gifted them 2 to 3 opportunities. It's inexplicable what we've seen from him this season. It's tough to even find the right words because he's been that bad, and it's just baffling because he's been one of the most, you know, cost-wise, when you look at his last few seasons, you compare it to what Roma paid for him given his performances. I mean, he's been one of the most valuable talents that they've plucked from the transfer market in recent years, but this season it's just been a disaster. So I think they're going to absolutely rue the day where it really comes back to haunt them, where they drop a crucial victory for not bringing in a name in January. I think they absolutely needed it. I thought they could have managed getting by with the current midfield setup, obviously with Daniele De Rossi, his injuries. I thought they obviously could have benefited from a more defensive-minded midfielder playing, you know, not necessarily the regista role that he plays, but somewhat similar to Nzonzi, but they didn't bring anyone in. And again, without anyone coming in January, I think we might not be seeing it now, but I think once March arrives and in April, when every point matters, I just have this feeling that they're really, really, really going to regret not having brought anybody in. Because anybody who's watched Roma, even once or twice a season, I mean, it's obvious that they're struggling at the back. So for Monchi not to bring anybody in, I was puzzled because they had a deal for Besiktas, defender Vida. It was wrapped up. It was done. But they decided not to go through with it. And this happened after Roma were massacred by Fiorentina in the Coppa Italia. I mean, we all know what happened there, but it was extremely puzzling, extremely puzzling.
Yeah, well, I know you said it's hard to find words to describe Fazio. I think saying that Juan Jesus should start over him, I think that really sums it up. So I don't think you can really say anything worse than that. So let's talk about something much more positive. So Zaniolo has been obviously one of the best stories in all of Serie A. This season, I think, you know, that made the Nainggolan deal, which you and I, we didn't like on the day that it happened. You and I thought it was a pretty good deal for Roma. And obviously, it looks like an absolute home run, large part because of Zaniolo, but also Nainggolan struggling. Right. So there's been obviously a lot of hype on him. I'm enjoying the articles of people who claim they haven't watched him and that are going off stats to write about him. That's how much
get me started.
That's how much hype there is around him. But you know, I'm not someone who gets excited by young players, and he definitely looks like the real deal. So give me your assessment of what you've seen from Zaniolo in the past few months.
Well, especially with Roma, I try not to get attached to certain names because it's almost a given that at some point they'll be sold. Zaniolo is one of the first players to make me really rethink that. There's just nothing that he does that I don't like. His technical ability is off the charts for someone of his age. Physically, I mean, he's huge. I saw him in the summer. I guess you can't really get a great appreciation of him unless you're like standing right there. But he's extremely built for being such, for being a teenager. And just the smarts that he displays on the pitch. I mean, Roma are renowned for being absurdly stupid season after season on the pitch. They do silly things. They lack maturity. And that is the exact opposite of Zaniolo. I mean, his game is just phenomenal. And we've been seeing in the last couple of weeks his versatility. He's played as a mezzala. He's played on the right wing. He's played, obviously, as the number 10 role right behind Dzeko in the hole. So I think that just shows how dynamic he is. And again, it's been very hard not to get very, very excited about him. I agree with you. Especially when it's such a small sample size, I think we've got to take what a lot of these young players do with a grain of salt. But, I mean, he's just doing it at such an exceptionally higher level than what we're used to seeing, particularly at Roma. It's really, really difficult not to get very excited and buy into this hype that everyone is throwing his way.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm not even going to ask you about his future, but it's all about Carpe Diem with the way that he's playing.
Right.
But let me ask you about two other players that have been surprising in a positive way. So let's go back to the end of 2018. Cristante was being called another typical Atalanta fool's gold. Looked like one of the worst deals of the summer because of how much Roma invested in him. He's been terrific recently. I got to say, he made me look really bad with my assessment of him. He's been excellent. And Patrick Schick looked like he was ready to maybe go back to Sampdoria on loan to get his value back up because it was just plummeted. I think he's still probably the highest paid player Roma ever invested in. And both have really turned it around recently. So let me ask you of the two, who has surprised you the most and, maybe even what stands out to you about each of them?
Well, it's a shame that Schick is currently injured, but he was enjoying without question, I think, his best moment over this last month and a half with Roma. And it wasn't even necessarily obviously scoring goals helps, but it was his work rate, his confidence. He started working with a mental coach in December. And I don't know if that has everything to do with it, but he just looks far more comfortable on the pitch. So he's been very impressive. I've really, really, really regretted him getting that injury at the time he did, because it really looked like it was finally starting to clip for him. Cristante is the one I have to say I'm totally shocked by. I was right along there with you. I didn't think he was necessarily fool's gold. Obviously, the numbers that players put up with Atalanta, you have to be weary of, because Gasparini's system, you know, he can make anybody look good. So I was certainly hesitant. But the thing that has impressed me most, and anybody who's watched them, it seems like Roma have an abundance of number 10s in the side. I mean, they have Ante Cioric, Pastore, Lorenzo Pellegrini, and then you had Cristante, Zaniolo. But it was basically born out of necessity, where Di Francesco had to move Cristante into a deeper role, put him alongside Nzonzi, and he still managed to find goals. He still managed to find a way to be creative in a far more deeper role. And his work rate, and even defensively, his movement when he's off the ball is just sensational. So I frankly did not expect that from him at all. I didn't think he had that in his game and his repertoire. So while Schick certainly has shown a lot at Sampdoria, I'm still hopeful that it'll click for him at Roma. It wouldn't surprise me, you know, if he just scored 20 goals in a season, just because we saw what he was capable of at Sampdoria. Yeah. But if you had told me that Cristante had the ability to be this versatile midfielder who doesn't necessarily have to play as a number 10, he can play in a deeper role, more of a mediano, I would not have believed it. And he's absolutely proven me wrong.
So let's go on a more, let's say, negative note. And these are players that are big names, and at least with people that maybe don't follow Roma closely. Kluivert, obviously, because of his dad, but also is highly rated at Ajax. And Cengiz Under, who last season was the breakout player on Roma. I mean, from where I'm sitting, and you watch Roma more closely than I, but I watch pretty much almost all their games as well. Who has disappointed you more between the two? Because Kluivert had gotten off to a pretty fast start off the bench, and recently maybe not so much. Under has had some nice goals that I would say to me his performances maybe aren't up to par. So let me ask you, since you follow them even closely, are you surprised? Who has disappointed you more out of the two?
So I think the one who is disappointed most is Kluivert. And I only say that because, I mean, the amount of hype that surrounded him when he arrived was just immense. I mean, he was seen as frankly, quite a coup for Roma. And that's not to say that he won't be or that he isn't. He's just going through a difficult period right now. Under is still putting up decent assist numbers, decent goal numbers. He's really struggled at times. The part with him that's been really confusing, other than not necessarily confusing, but he suffered from injuries. But this season, more so than last season, which is a bit puzzling, he's really found it difficult to get into the match at some points. And he'll go absolutely anonymous for two or three matches in a row, but then he'll score just an absolute screamer from outside the area. And given how poor Roma has been defensively, they need every goal that they can get. So he's provided some ample goal scoring chances and ample goals that have come at absolutely crucial points. So given the expectations versus Under compared to Kluivert, I think Kluivert has been more of a disappointment. In this last month or 2 months, he's really seen his role diminish. So I don't know what's been going on there. He's asked about it, and Eusebio Di Francesco just says the typical, the manager speak. He's got to keep working hard. He's, you know, his chances will come. But even in matches where you would think Roma would do some rotation, he's still not really getting involved. So it makes me wonder what's going on in training, which is a bit worrying, to be frank. But we'll see. Again, I think he will come good. He's young. This is his first big European experience at a bigger in a bigger league. So I'm not going to panic, but I'd say certainly Kluivert has been more disappointing.
Okay, let's close. The last Roma question that I have is probably the most important for the long-term future of the club, and this is on the stadium. And ever since Pallotta shortly after took over the club. This has really been a big objective on the stadium. You've been covering this story really well on your site. I definitely recommend everyone check out all the coverage on AS Roma Press. There's a lot of excitement once the mayor of the city of Roma, Raggi, said we'll do the stadium and all. But correct me if I'm wrong, this isn't the first time she said that. So let me ask you how optimistic you are. And give our listeners, who aren't as familiar as those who listen to your Roma podcast, and they all should, give us kind of an update on that. And tell me first how optimistic you are with this.
So I'm pretty optimistic. If you would ask me this maybe 4 to 6 months ago, I would have said I'm not as optimistic, just because, to make a long story short, the real estate developer who Roma partnered with on the project, their president and CEO was arrested for bribery, and he was one of 8 or 9 names, I believe, who were caught up in this political scandal, essentially, of various businessmen trying to pay off officials to obviously have things go their way. So when that happened in the summer, I thought, oh my gosh, well, the project has gone bad. Thankfully, it wasn't. Essentially, all that had to happen was all the various bodies who approved the various zoning, the actual buildings, so on and so forth. What happened was the mayor of Rome, she made all of the approvals up to the point that Roma had gotten. She made sure they were looked over, double checked. And then within the last 2 weeks, one of the bodies up in Torino, they approved one of the most controversial parts of the project, which was the mobility and the surrounding traffic that would involve the project. It's been quite controversial. Anybody who's been to the Stadio Olimpico, you know, it's difficult to get to, and they're trying to make this stadium the exact opposite of that. So there were some questions surrounding the viability of the traffic surrounding the stadium. But once the double check came through okay a couple of weeks ago, that is when I started to get a bit more optimistic. Now, it wasn't necessarily a step forward. It was just, again, more so of a double check. But there really would have been problems if some problems came back with this traffic portion of the project, because then they would have had to rethink, I think, more than just that portion of the stadium. So I think it will happen. Anybody who's not familiar with Italy, I mean, the bureaucracy is absurd. I mean, you can make an entire podcast about that. I mean, there's a reason why so few clubs in Italy own their stadium. Frankly, it's just easier to rent as opposed to going through this process. I mean, I believe Roma are in year 7 of just trying to get a shovel into the ground now, which sounds absurd, but it's true. It's the case. They've been having to go through all this red tape, and it finally looks like there's light at the end of the tunnel. The mayor of Rome, Virginia Raggi, she's been saying that construction will begin this year. I'm not going to hold my breath until I actually see people doing some digging, but it finally looks like we're starting to get some movement, because this has been, it's been absurd at how slow this project has moved. It's an embarrassment, and it's a total indictment on Italy, and yeah, just shows why so many people are hesitant to invest in these clubs. And it's why we see all these smaller sides going bankrupt year after year. Nobody's willing to invest.
Yeah, very well said. So, John, it's always wonderful to have you on the podcast. Everyone definitely check out AS Roma Press. The site is great. A lot of exclusive content, interviews, analysis. The AS Roma podcast is fantastic. I listen to it all the time. And also check out John's new project, Serie A Show. I like hearing you talking about other clubs as well with our friends Chloe and Nima. So thanks so much, John, for joining us. Always a pleasure to have you on Calcio Land.
Thanks again for having me, David.
Always a pleasure to chat with John Solano. He helped us. We wrapped up. We basically covered all the top teams in Serie A. We're going to get to Lazio in the coming weeks. I'm going to be on vacation next week, but Calcioland will still be here. Alex is going to be doing some shows. He is going to be joined by my very good friend, Claudio Perfetto. You guys know him from Di Marzio's site. We've had him on our podcast as a guest multiple times. So Claudio is going to help out Alex. So the format will be somewhat similar. You'll get a break from me. I'll be on vacation. So we'll have two episodes next week. And then when I come back, I look forward to doing our 200th episode. So as always, thank you guys for your support. I look forward to chatting with you when I'm back from vacation. But I think you guys will really enjoy the shows with Claudio and Alex.